Nehemiah 13 is where we're going to go back. And if you remember, there was a period of time where Nehemiah had left Jerusalem. He was the governor there for 12 years. And as the leader, he was bringing not only the walls of the city to construction, to completion, but also he was encouraging the people within that city as well as the entire region of Judah, encouraging them to do what's right. Well, he had to go back. He was the cupbearer to the king. And we don't know exactly how long he was gone to either Babylon or back to Persia, but we know it was long enough for some major problems to creep in back in Jerusalem while he was gone. So when he finally returned, he noticed these problems right off. And he identified these problems for what they were. They weren't problems, they weren't mistakes, they were in fact sins. And so we've already looked at three of these problems. If you can imagine what it must have been like for him to come and see these problems, one right after the other. We've already seen them. There was intermarriage with unbelievers that he had to deal with. You remember Eliashib, who could have very well have been the high priest, let the traitor, Tobiah, into the temple area, and gave him a nice apartment there, had to throw all the other belongings in that building out. He had to deal with that issue. And then, as we looked at 2 weeks ago, they stopped supporting the work of God. They stopped their tithe. They stopped even supporting the workers of God. And we come tonight to a fourth problem, and we're still not done. There's a few more in this chapter as well that he had to deal with. How far they had strayed from what we had seen just a few chapters earlier when they committed themselves completely to the Lord. If you remember in chapter 10 and in chapter 12, they swore to the Lord and they committed themselves to the Lord. There was even some that signed their name on a document saying, "We are going to be true to God." And yet, just a few chapters later, a few short years later, we find these problems. And it continues to go on in chapter 13, where Nehemiah has to address these. Back in chapter 10, if you keep your finger in chapter 13, I want you to see one of the things that they committed themselves to the Lord. They were coming off of a spiritual high. They were so excited that God had provided to them this recently rebuilt wall. And so in praise to God, in worship to God, they committed themselves to God. And in chapter 10, verse 31, we find one area, one aspect of this commitment. Chapter 10, verse 31, it says, "And if the people of the land," referring to the Gentiles, those who were unbelievers there about the city of Jerusalem, "if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day or on any holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every debt." And so they are recommitting themselves back in chapter 10 to remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy, like it says in the Ten Commandments, the fourth of the Ten Commandments. And so we see this commitment back then. But now, back in chapter 13, look what happened after Nehemiah left. Chapter 13, verse 15. He comes back, and in those days, Nehemiah says, "I saw in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves and lading asses or donkeys, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. There dwelt also men of Tyre therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem." What happened? They went right back to what they had formerly committed themselves to not doing. They were going to remember the Sabbath day, and here they are going right against their word, right against their commitment. How soon they have fallen from their commitment to God. Isn't that an illustration of our life too? How soon, how easy, how quickly do we turn away from the commitments that we make to God? And yet, as we're going to see again, God is always gracious and merciful. Even though they went right back to buying and selling on the Sabbath day, God was still going to work with them and work in their lives. You see, the problem was the Sabbath day was to be a special day to the Lord. It was a special day not just to the Lord, but it was also to be a special day for the people, for the Lord. They were to use that day for devotion to the Lord. They were supposed to use that day in worship of the Lord. And we're going to look tonight at the steps that Nehemiah took to deal with this sin of breaking the Sabbath. That's what they did. They broke the Sabbath. They forgot it. And it was a sin because we find back in Exodus where God gave Moses and the people that covenant, that those Ten Commandments, we find in the fourth commandment, God telling them, you are to remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. In fact, keep your finger here again. Let's look back at that law, Exodus chapter 20, because something very interesting about that commandment is that it is the longest commandment that we find in the Ten Commandments, the one that deals with the Sabbath day, the longest. And so in Exodus chapter 20, where we find the Ten Commandments, beginning in verse 8, we hear the familiar words. Remember the Sabbath day. The Jews understood this. The Jews knew this. This was something that they had in their history, and their ancestors as well understood this. To remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, the Lord says. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work. Thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Now, we're going to look some tonight at how this commandment certainly applies to us today, but we're also going to look at how Nehemiah dealt with this sin of breaking the commandment, of profaning the Sabbath day. We're going to see how he deals with this sin and how we can use his example to deal with any sin, not just Sabbath breaking, but to deal with any kind of sin that we find in our life or in the life of someone within our family or even in the life of people within our church. There are certain ways that God has provided for us to deal with sin, and Nehemiah is a powerful example of this. And if we use his example, we will be able to confront sins in our own life so that we can live a life that is glorifying to God and a life that has an impact on the world around us. So we're going to see the steps for dealing with sin in these verses. Not just dealing with Sabbath breaking, but dealing with sin in general. And so with these four steps, we're also going to apply them to this command. First step is that there needs to be a consciousness of sin. There needs to be a consciousness or an awareness of what is going on that is wrong. A consciousness and an awareness of sin. Again in verse 15, in those days, Nehemiah saw a problem in Judah. We just finished reading how he was aware of the sin in the camp. He didn't ignore it. Rather, he identified it for what it was. And this is what we need to do when we see sin. When we see sin in our lives, in our family's life, in our church's life, we must not look past it. We must identify it and say what it is and deal with it. We need to be conscious of the problem of sin. We need to be conscious of the problem of sin. When Nehemiah returned to Jerusalem, it says that in those days he saw. What did he see? What was he conscious of? What was he perceiving? He saw an awful lot of work going on. What was some of the work? Well, verse 15 again, there were some that were treading wine presses, okay? There were some that were bringing in the sheaves. There were some that were lading their donkeys. These were their transportation, is to get things from place to place for their commerce. They were also carrying wine and grapes and figs and all manner of burdens. And then they sold victuals, it says there in the last part of verse 15, and even there were some neighbors from people of Tyre, and they brought fish and all manner of ware, and they bought and they sold and all these different things. And we think, well, what's the problem here? There's a lot of productivity going on here. There's a lot of prosperity. And I would imagine that Nehemiah was encouraged that there was this kind of commerce going on in Jerusalem. Remember, it wasn't going on when he came there the first time. And so he finally comes back and the city is bustling. The city is busy and people are prospering. But the problem wasn't what they were doing. The problem was when they were doing it. They were doing this again on the Sabbath, it says in verse 15. And then later on in verse 15, it says on the Sabbath day. And then in verse 16, it identifies again, these men of Tyre brought in their things to sell on the Sabbath. This day was the day to be remembered. And yet now they had forgotten it. God said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And they ignored his command. They forgot his command. And it wasn't so much what they were doing, but when they were doing it. God had already ordained for those other days to be used for what they were doing, the buying and the selling, the trading. And yet they were using it in the wrong way. So what is this Sabbath that they were breaking? What is this Sabbath that is so important to God, both in the Old Testament as well as in the New Testament? Well, the word for Sabbath is the Hebrew Shabbat. And from that word, it literally has the idea of rest. And this particular rest is something that God has ordained for His people to enjoy. It is, as we saw in Exodus 20, a covenant law. It was a covenant principle. When God established the covenant with Israel, He gave them these Ten Commandments and said, "This is what I expect from you." It's called the moral law. It shows us the character of God as well as the expectations of God for people. Now, we know that we do not keep the Ten Commandments. We cannot keep the Ten Commandments apart from God helping us. The law of the Old Testament was a schoolmaster to show us that we are miserable failures when it comes to God's moral law. It shows us that we need Christ. And so this is what the law was for. God is saying, this is who I am, and this is what I expect, and no one of us can meet that criteria that God has in the moral law. But it was still a covenant law. There's still no excuse. And this particular law, the fourth commandment, we find in Exodus 20 as well as in Exodus 16. If you think about it, it doesn't seem to be a real terribly difficult command to keep, does it? To remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Basically, that means that you don't do work. Now, I don't think that that's too terribly difficult. It's easy to take some rest and get the sleep that you need and be able to relax, spend time with your friends and family, both at church and at home. And you think that that is not too terribly difficult, but this command is a bellwether command. Because if you don't abide by something as simple as remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy, you're going to forget about some of those other commands that God has given you as well. It's an index, if you will, of how you're going to keep the rest of His commands. And so we find here that they had no choice but to keep His command. This was a covenant law. But why did God command this law? Was it just something arbitrary? Did He say, I'm just going to pick a day and I'm going to say, you cannot work on this day just because I want to, because I'm God and I can do that? No, I think we're going to find that this covenant law has its basis in a creation principle as well. It wasn't something arbitrary. In fact, it's rooted in the past. And so we see that the Sabbath, this period of rest for devotion to God, as well as refreshment for man, is also a creation principle. This Sabbath did not start when God instituted the Ten Commandments. It started when God rested on the seventh day, back in Genesis chapter 2. If you look at those verses, it talks about how He created all these things, and then He took that seventh day and He rested. And that word rest is the root word for Sabbath, Shabbat. The Sabbath was not something new when the Ten Commandments were instituted. It was something that was going on all along. And it was meant for rest. It was meant for refreshment. It was meant to remember the Lord and to be revived by the Lord. But how do we apply this principle to our situation today? I believe that this covenant principle, which is based on a creation principle, really becomes to us also a Christian principle. The New Testament has never taken away this commandment. It has never abrogated this principle. In fact, we see the exact opposite. When Jesus, who is the one who instituted the New Testament, came, when Jesus came into this world, He did not ignore the Sabbath. Rather, He kept the Sabbath. In fact, if you go over, keep your finger in Nehemiah 13, and let's look at Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, we see that God, through Jesus Christ, is making a statement about the Sabbath. Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, we read, "And at that time Jesus went on the Sabbath day." What was He doing on the Sabbath day, Matthew 12, 1? Well, He went through the corn, and His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. And the Pharisees saw it, and they said unto Him, "Behold, your disciples do not do that which is lawful to do upon the Sabbath day." And Jesus said unto them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless. But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. But if ye had known what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would have not condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. And it goes on in verse 9, he departed, went into their synagogue. And in verse 10, and behold, there was a man on the same Sabbath day that had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep? And if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. Then saith he to the man, stretch forth thine hand, and he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole like as the other. We see in Matthew 12 and throughout the Gospels that Jesus Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath. He doesn't discontinue the Sabbath. He doesn't do away with it. He doesn't abrogate it. He says, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And so instead of doing away with it, he clarifies to us what the Sabbath means as a Christian. You see, the Sabbath was not made, man was not made for the Sabbath, as he said, but the Sabbath was made for man. And the Sabbath, this day of rest, you can do works of necessity, you can do works of mercy, and you can do good works to serve God. And we are not to be legalistic and say, well, these are the certain things you can't do and can do, because we are not under the law, but we are under grace. And so God has given us the liberty to do these kinds of things on the Sabbath day, on the day that belongs to Him. Now, of course, this particular Sabbath that they had in the Old Testament was on a different day. It was on Saturday. It was on the seventh day. But as the Lord of the Sabbath, He can do with the Sabbath what He pleases. And as we see through the New Testament, it bears out that He changed the Sabbath day for the Christian, not from the seventh, but to the first day, on the first day of the week. And so there is a day that belongs to the Lord, still for us as Christians. There is a Christian principle. But we do not say that you cannot do this and you cannot do that, you cannot do this, like the Pharisees were doing, and they had all these little minute details, barely you could even go out and walk too far outside of your house. But we need to keep the principle in mind and recognize that this day, the first day of the week, is to be devoted to the Lord for worship, for rest, for refreshment, for spiritual revival, so that we can do those works of necessity. We need to eat, we need to clothe, we need to be clean. There are some other jobs that are of necessity to be able to work acts of mercy and acts of goodness. But because the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath, it's not a list of don'ts, but a list of do's. He says, do rest. Use the Sabbath day as God intended it to be used. Do be refreshed. Do spend time in worship. Do good works. Be merciful. Use this day the way God intended. So the question is, we can look at the children of Israel at this time. Do we remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy? It is not just a covenant principle. It's a creation principle. It's a Christian principle. And the Lord still says that we need to remember it to keep it holy. Are we doing that? Maybe this is one of the sins that we need to address in our life as well. Do we truly consider it and think about it for what God intended it for it to be? There needs to be a consciousness and awareness of our problems. And this problem may be that we do not keep the Sabbath and keep the day that belongs to the Lord. Well, then these other steps are important for this problem as well as for this one. We also need to be conscious not only of this particular problem of sin, but we also need to be conscious of the power of sin. As we look at verses 15 and 16, their sin did not just affect them, it affected others. Look at verse 16. You see, first of all, in verse 15, we see that Nehemiah saw the problem within his own people, but it didn't stay there. Sin is never content to stay where it is. There also dwelt men of Tyre. These are strangers far from Jerusalem, who were also therein. And they also brought fish and all manner of ware and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. They were not obligated to keep this command, but the sin of the Jews spread to these Gentiles. And they saw no difference between the people of God and themselves. And so they thought, hey, what a great opportunity. They knew where they could make some money on Sabbath day, so they went to Jerusalem to make that money. They the world figured out it was no big deal because it was no big deal to the people of God. And yet it was a big deal. Sin will often cause us to lose any real influence or impact for the Lord. They didn't have any influence on these people of Tyre for the Lord. And if we harbor sin in our life, and we don't see anything wrong with sin in our life, and we don't take the steps to correct this sin in our life, if there's no difference and no distinction, you know what? We're going to lose our impact on the world for Jesus Christ as well. What did Nehemiah do when he became aware and conscious of this problem? It says in verse 6 or verse 15, I testified against them in that day. This is what sin needs. The first step is a consciousness of sin. We need to be aware of it. We cannot look past it. We need to identify it for what it is. And the second step is that there needs to be a confrontation of sin. There needs to be a confrontation. Not only did Nehemiah confront those committing the sin directly, as we saw in verse 15, but he also confronted those who were in charge and actually condoned this sin. Look at verse 17. Then, Nehemiah says, I contended with the nobles of Judah. They were the ones at fault. They were the ones who were in charge. They were the ones who were supposed to make sure that the people were obeying this commandment of remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And so he contended with the nobles of Judah and said unto them, what evil thing is this that you do and profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers thus, didn't they do the same thing? And did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet, you are bringing more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath day. There was no cover-up for this sin. Nehemiah went right to the source, and he confronted them of this problem, and he revealed to them the complaint of their sin. He revealed the complaint of their sin. The word is contend. This word is the same word that we found in verse 11. When he contended with the rulers about another problem. So he was having these verbal arguments saying, this is wrong. You need to deal with this sin. He was verbally confronting them. And this is so often what we try to not do when it comes to sin. We want to look past it. We want to think, well, God will deal with that. The fact is God has given us, each other, to be able to hold one another accountable and to confront these sins as they come into our life so we can do what's right. We need each other, and often we need to be confronted. And these nobles that Nehemiah confronted in verse 17 were responsible for the welfare of Israel. They were responsible for the political welfare and the commercial welfare. They forgot about the religious welfare, the spiritual welfare. And so because they were so caught up in them getting money on the Sabbath day, they ignored it altogether. They failed in their responsibility to the Lord. And so Nehemiah revealed to them the complaint of their sin. And then he revealed to them the critical nature of their sin. The critical nature, you see, they didn't think it was any big deal. It's just a day. It's no big deal. But it was a big deal. And Nehemiah said in his confrontation with them, what evil thing is this that you do and profane the Sabbath day? Now that word evil has the idea of something that brings judgment or calamity. Basically, he's saying bad things are going to happen because you're disobeying God's command. So why are you doing this? And what was the problem? What was their sin problem? They were profaning the Sabbath day. That word profane means to make common, make ordinary, to pollute it. Just like we hear about the pollution in Indianapolis, and every once in a while on a hot day there's a no-zone action day, and you're supposed to not mow your lawn until later at night, not supposed to get gas at the gas station until later on at night, because they're concerned about the pollution and the ozone in the atmosphere. And here Nehemiah is saying, this is what you've done to God's special day. You have polluted it. You have profaned it. You've made it look like every other day, and there's no difference between you and the Gentiles anymore. And he said, this is a problem. You were supposed to remember the Sabbath day, but now you've ignored it. There was no difference. And there was no devotion, but only defilement. That was the problem. And it was a critical nature. It was serious. It wasn't something just to look past. And then, in his confrontation, verse 18, he revealed the consequences of this sin. He says, I want you to remember what happened when your ancestors did the exact same thing and forgot the Sabbath day to keep it holy. He says in verse 18, didn't your fathers do the same thing? Did they do thus? And did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? You need to remember, look at the bad example of your ancestors. You see, they did not learn from the mistakes of their fathers. How often do we not learn from the mistakes of others? Do we think that we are above them? Do we think that we're going to not make the same mistakes? Or if we do, that we're not going to suffer the consequences? They perhaps thought that. But they didn't remember those things. And as one person said it, of course, those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. And so he says, look at the conduct of your forefathers. They too did not remember the Sabbath day. They profaned the Sabbath day. Now look at their consequences. The consequences, in verse 18, there was calamity again. God brought all this evil. It's not talking about moral wrong. It's talking about bad things happening because they disobeyed God. That's what that word evil means there. Bad things happen when you disobey God. You're past exile. They have just come off of exile. They were taken captive in other countries, and they were just coming back. And 100 years they've been in Jerusalem, and they did it again. Jeremiah warned of this happening. Jeremiah lived in the 600s before Christ, 600. This is about 450, so we're talking about 150, 200 years in between. Jeremiah warned them before they were ever taken captive. He said in Jeremiah 17:27, if you will not hearken unto me to hallow the Sabbath day and to not bear a burden, even entering in at the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, if you disobey me, he says, then I will kindle a fire in the gates of Jerusalem, and it will devour the palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched. And then Nehemiah says, that's what happened then, and this is what's going to happen if you continue down this road of sin. He was confronting them with the consequences of their sin. He says, if you do not remember what happened to them, it's going to happen to you. He says in verse 18, you're bringing more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. We see in these two verses that sin needs to be confronted. Sin needs to be confronted. You cannot just let things go on as they are because it will only get worse. We must confront sin in our life. We must confront sin in the life of others that we know and we love before it's too late. But then it leads, after we do that biblical form of confrontation, Jesus lays it out for us in the book of Matthew, what must happen when we confront sin. Then third, there needs to be a correction of sin. This is the next step, the third step. There needs to be a correction of sin. We see this in verses 19 through 21. Nehemiah then says how he took steps to correct the problem and the sin of Sabbath breaking. And it came to pass, he says in verse 19, that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, some very practical steps, I commanded that the gates should be shut. How simple! And charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. So just to remove the temptation completely. And then, some of my servants, I set at the gates, so that there should no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. So, the merchants and the sellers of all kind of ware, the Gentiles, were lodged outside of Jerusalem once or twice. And then I testified against them and said, why are you lodging about the wall? If you do it again, I will lay hands on you. And from that time forth, they came no more on the Sabbath. We see the correction that Nehemiah took. You see, Nehemiah took some very drastic and aggressive action to make this sin stop. He took some aggressive action against this sin that he saw in the camp. And this is how we need to treat sin. If we are going to confront sin, we need to be able to correct it. And we need to take drastic measures sometimes. Didn't the Lord say that if our right hand offends thee, what are you supposed to do? Cut it off. Now, he's not talking literally, but certainly spiritually and figuratively, it takes drastic action to deal with sin because sin is serious. Sin in the camp is serious. Sin in our life is serious. Sin in our family is serious. And if we don't take care of it, if it's not confronted the way God has told us to confront it, it will just get worse. And so we need to take these steps in an aggressive way. Nehemiah was an active man. And we see this completely in his life, in this book. He is always active, never passive. And same in the response to this sin. In verse 19, it says that he commanded. It says that he charged. And then it says that he set. These are all action verbs. He was actively, aggressively taking steps to prevent this kind of sin again. And he did it when the temptation was closest. Now, the temptation here was for them to break the Sabbath. Obvious, it was on a certain day. And so he took some very practical, obvious steps to prevent that kind of sin from happening. Keep the temptation outside of those walls. You know, sometimes it just takes some very simple, practical steps for us to avoid temptation. There are certain things that we know that we're going to be tempted by, and what do? So often we get close to those things, we keep the gates open. Like Nehemiah, we need to shut those gates. We need to shut the gates to our soul and our heart, and on the times that we're getting close to temptation, we just need to shut them in a very practical way and say, I'm not going to go there anymore. Keep it outside those walls. Keep the temptation outside those walls. And that's what he did. Before the temptation became too strong, he took some very drastic and deliberate action. We see in these verses that there was aggressive protection. It says that he commanded the gates, in verse 19, that they should be shut. What was he doing there? The steps he was taking, he was protecting the people from sinning. And he was protecting them in the most vulnerable points where they were going to be tempted. Those gates. We have certain gates in our bodies. The eye gate, the ear gate, the mouth gate, the sense gate. These are the senses that we are often tempted with. The lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. And Nehemiah gives us such a good example that we just need to shut those gates. Shut them down. Keep the temptation outside before we even get close to those temptations. It's aggressive protection. Aggressive protection, and then there's aggressive prevention. Aggressive prevention. The next command that he says is that these gates are not to be opened, in verse 19, until after the Sabbath, until after the temptation and the storm of temptation is passed. He says no one is allowed in, no one is allowed out. And he did it for a set time. The Bible teaches that so often temptation comes, but it comes for a certain period of time. We're not going to be constantly tempted by something. God says, I will give you a way to escape so that you can be able to bear these temptations. So temptation is not something that is permanent in your life. This particular one that they had would last for one day out of seven. Maybe ours is a little stronger than that. But we need to have aggressive prevention. We need to recognize that our body is the temple of God. We need to realize that God's day is still special. And so we need to do all we can to prevent sin and temptation from coming into our life. And then there was an aggressive partnership to keep them from sinning. There was aggressive protection, aggressive prevention, and then also in verse 19, aggressive partnership. He says, some of my servants I set at the gates. Who was in charge of the gates first? Those nobles. They failed. They didn't do their job. And now Nehemiah says, I have some faithful, trusted servants, and I'm going to set them there at those gates, and they are going to hold the people accountable. I'm not just going to shut the gates and expect them to obey. I'm going to have some servants there to show accountability and say, you cannot go in, you cannot go out, and we're going to keep doing what's right. We need to have accountability with each other in order to prevent sin. And then, in verses 20 and 21, we see this aggressive persistence. You know, the world will continue to distract us from doing the will and work of God. The world is a master at that. And so we see in verse 20, that's what they did. The merchants and sellers of all kind of ware lodged about Jerusalem once or twice. They weren't expecting this, first of all. They weren't expecting that they were going to take drastic action like shutting the gates. But they thought, hey, maybe it was just a fluke. Maybe it was just a one-time thing. We're going to come back. And then we're going to come back again. But then their persistence was met by Nehemiah's persistence. And he said, if you do this again, I'm going to lay hands on you. And it says in verse 21, from that time forth, they came no more on the Sabbath. This kind of aggressive action and aggressive correction against sin is essential. And we see in verse 19 that no burdens were to be brought in on the Sabbath day. This was the goal of Nehemiah. This was the sin they were committing. But compare that to verse 15 where it said all manner of burdens were being brought back and forth. Now that is a great change. Nehemiah didn't just say, okay, we're going to gradually stop sinning here. Okay, I know you've been doing this for such a long time. Now we're just going to kind of gradually get less and less sin in our life so we can please God. No, it was an abrupt stop. When it comes to sin in our life, this is what it takes to correct it. It's not a gradual decrease of the sin. It is an aggressive correction and repudiation of that sin, not doing less, but none at all. And then the fourth step that we see, as he's dealing with the sin of Sabbath breaking, as we deal with perhaps that sin and others, Verse 22, there needs to be that cleansing from sin. That cleansing from sin. Verse 22, and I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves, and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. And then he prays, remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy. Now, after being confronted and corrected by Nehemiah of their sin, the people were ready to be restored. And that's the wonderful thing about God's grace, because he makes forgiveness possible through Jesus Christ. You see, God was patient again. God did not bring the chastisements that they deserved, but he was gracious and merciful, and so he is to us. That is why we need to go to Jesus Christ for the cleansing that comes to us. Because this cleansing from sin takes a daily purification. If we want to be preventing sin in our life, it takes a daily work, daily progress, a daily purification. He said, I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves. This was a ceremonial cleansing. They probably washed water on themselves. But it was an illustration of what really should have taken place in their hearts. And I believe it was. But this is where our cleansing starts. It's not an external cleansing, it's an internal cleansing, and that's why Christ came, to give us this purification after we have been confronted with sin, after we have been corrected of our sin. Now we can be cleansed of our sin. It says in Ephesians 5:26 that the Lord came so that he can sanctify and cleanse us as the church with the washing of water by the word. So that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. That is his goal for you. That is his goal for me. That is his goal for your family. That is his goal for this church. And so as we take the steps that Nehemiah took, we must not forget the fourth step of personal daily cleansing. 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins, and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. It takes a daily purification that only comes through Jesus Christ. Then it takes a daily pursuit. He told the Levites in verse 22 to come and keep the gates. Come and keep the gates. This was a daily pursuit of keeping the temptation on the outside on those Sabbath days. To keep has the idea of watching over and guarding. These Levites had a lot to do, didn't they? We've seen that Nehemiah gave them job after job after job. They obviously were very faithful men. But here's another job for you. You are now going to keep and charge over the gates of Jerusalem to keep the people from sinning on the Sabbath. It was a daily pursuit. And so, yes, every day we need to have standards set in our life, keeping watch over our hearts so that we don't go back to those same old sins that we've committed to God that we were going to avoid. It takes a daily pursuit. Then it also takes a daily purpose. What was the purpose of these Levites keeping the gates in verse 22? To sanctify the Sabbath day. They wanted to keep that day holy. They wanted to keep it the way God had intended and commanded. And it turned the negative of that command, thou shalt not, into a positive. This is what you shall do. It was no more, I don't get to do this on the Sabbath day, but rather it was, I get to do what God wants us to do on the Sabbath day. And this is the goal of restoration. It's the goal of being completely sanctified and completely consecrated to God. You know, every single one of our days ought to have this purpose. Not just a Sabbath day, not just on a Sunday, not just any particular day, but every day ought to be a day of complete sanctification and consecration to God. And then, the last thing that we see in verse 22 is that it takes daily prayer. Nehemiah was a man of prayer. Nehemiah prayed in verse 22, remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy. He prayed for God's approval. He wasn't there for the approval of men. He was there for the approval of God. He said, remember me, Lord. He prayed for God's attention. He said, spare me, Lord. I know that I'm weak, but I pray that your strength will overcome my weakness. It was a prayer for God's abundance according to your mercy. He remembered that without God, he could do nothing. So he went to God for everything. With this cleansing comes a character and a conduct that is pleasing to God. But it can only come through the grace and mercy of God. These are the steps that we need to take to deal with sin. Any kind of sin in our life or the life of people in our family or within our own church. But the specific sin that Nehemiah dealt with was the profaning of the Sabbath. And maybe this is one that we need to deal with as well. But there are others that we need to deal with. And we need to do it through a consciousness of sin. We need to be aware of it. Cannot look over it, but identify it and call it what it is. Then a confrontation of sin. We need to speak up against sin. Then we need to have a correction of sin, taking practical steps to avoid it. And then finally we receive that cleansing from sin that comes only through Jesus Christ. Now, with that restoration, with that cleansing from sin, every day can be a special day for God. Every day, not just one day, not just Sunday, not just a Sabbath day, but every day, if we live like this, can be a special day for God.